Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I would like to remind you that the conference call is being recorded. We have on the line Robin Gross, Wendy Sulzer, Roy Balesti, and David Cheek. Is that correct?
Cake.
I apologize. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Thank you. This is the meeting of the non-commercial user stakeholder group policy meeting. And I'll quickly go through the agenda. First, we can go through some of the non-council issues. The IPCBC proposals for mandatory new protections for domain names, quick update on what's happening there. Second point there is the Cyber Cafe constituency proposal. The third point there is possible non-contracted parties house intersessional meeting in January. And then we've got some things to talk about that's on the council agenda for Thursday. There's a motion on the registration abuse policies working group, a recommendation on uniformity of contracts to address registration abuse, and then another motion on second-level protections for certain Red Cross and Olympic Committee names, and then a third motion on approval of a PDP working group to evaluate the protection of names and acronyms for certain international organizations. And then update on the URS, Uniform Rapid Suspension System, and there'll be a discussion on defensive registrations, and then a discussion on the Accountability and Transparency Review Team selection process and timetable. Any questions on this, or was there anything anyone wanted to add or subtract?
Go ahead.
Perhaps update on the sorry fate of the vice chair election.
Good point. Okay. Did somebody else have something they wanted to add?
This is Roy. I don't know if this is the right meeting for it, but just want to throw in. I just finished the meeting of the SIG who is. Policy development process, and they will be seeking for official statements from the constituencies. So I just wanted to...
Let's hear that first.
Yeah, if you could give us an update on that, that'd be great.
Right now?
Please.
Okay.
Or as soon as you'd like to.
No, that's fine. Well, I mean, the first meeting, it was mainly organizational and setting the agenda. Based on what I could gather, there were three individuals interested in the privacy aspects, which I know that's something that we're concerned about. But the main thing that we will have to do next is to present to the committee an official statement so that they can incorporate it into the initial report. And apparently this working group is going to move really fast. It's going to have meetings every week, trying to see if we can get that initial report ready before the Beijing meeting. That's what I have.
Oh, thank you. So this working group is going to meet every week, and then it expects to have its report ready by when?
Before the Beijing meeting.
Ah, before Beijing. Okay.
Yeah, that's the target. The chair realizes that it might not be the case, but they're going to, the whole group is going to aim at that.
Okay. Who's the chair of this group again?
Oh, my goodness. Mike O'Connor, if I remember correctly.
Michael O'Connor, okay.
Yeah.
Is this the pick who is?
Yes.
Yep, it's Mikey.
Sounds like Avery. Good morning, Avery.
Hello to you, too.
And, okay, and so we need to come up with an official statement from the group for the working group to incorporate in its report. Is that what you said is the next step for us on this?
Yes.
Okay. And is there anyone else in this working group from the non-commercial users besides you, or are you pretty much the only one in there right now?
Well, Avery's in the group as well. Yeah.
Great.
And there was another name that I couldn't recognize. I don't have the
I think
name.
Amr was there too.
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, so we've got three people in there. Did anyone else have any questions on this point?
What
comments?
Is the statement that we're being asked to generate?
a statement of interest, you know, if there is a particular issue that we want to address. I mean, one of the items that will be addressed by the working group is data protection and privacy. So I know that this has been an issue of concern before, so, but this is a different group, so.
Do you think that you might prepare a draft or an outline and a message to the list suggesting what we might want to say or asking questions to us?
I'll be happy to prepare a draft.
That would be terrific.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
That would be a great start. Okay. All right. Was there anything else on this point?
This is Aubrey. If I can add, I don't think we're quite up to the point where they're asking for the constituency statements yet, but maybe I missed that. And I think it's going to be a challenge getting the privacy stuff in there because while it's a concern, it's not, I don't think it's explicitly called out in the charter. This was the charter we had all the fun with.
Hmm.
But I might be wrong.
So when will the working group be meeting? What, and do we need to get more people in there, or do you think we've got enough in there?
I think we have three in there, so that's probably enough. It just started today.
It meets again next Tuesday.
Yep.
Okay, great. Anything else on this point? Okay, then let's go to the first issue on the agenda on the IPCBC proposals for mandatory new protection mechanisms for new domain names. So for those who don't know, during the Toronto meeting, the intellectual property constituency and the business constituency sent a letter to ICANN with basically 8-point demands asking for new and additional protection mechanisms to be incorporated into the new GTLD policy. Of course, many of these proposals are actually reopening issues that had been previously decided by the GNSO in the STI work and report and recommendations that were then passed unanimously by the GNSO. So there's some concern that the intellectual property constituency and the business constituency are trying to circumvent the policy development process here and just basically lobby the new staff at the last minute for these additional changes and rights that they weren't able to get before. So the non-commercial stakeholder group policy committee drafted a statement and issued a statement about a week, maybe a week and a half ago now, responding to those 8 points specifically and asking that there not be any new changes or new policy proposals made at this late date to the new GTLD policy. FADI has organized a meeting this Thursday and Friday in L.A. to follow up to the Brussels discussions. Kathy participated and I participated remotely on the telephone during the Brussels discussions on this topic, and then specifically the IPCBC proposals were supposedly taken off the agenda in Brussels and put on the agenda in Los Angeles for this Thursday. And so I'm going to go down on Thursday and participate in this meeting in person. Unfortunately, I'll be the only one from the non-commercial users and the business constituency and the IP constituency. Basically, the commercial stakeholder group will have between 12 and 16 people in the room to lobby ICANN staff for these changes. And I'll be there in person, and Kathy will be on the phone from D.C., and she was really, really helpful during the Brussels discussion on the phone. I was, frankly, really surprised with the way that FADI listened to what she had to say and actually a couple of times took her side and said, no, I'm going to stand with the user. I'm going to stand with Kathy on this. So, I am encouraged that there's a good chance that he will not reopen these issues, that he will accept what's in the guidebook now. But you never know. I mean, you know, there's an enormous pressure from the trademark lobby. There's going to be tons of, you know, we're going to be really outnumbered in terms of the people in the room calling for changes. So, you know, I'll just wait and tell you Thursday night how it all goes. Does anyone have any questions on this or comments? Or?
I mean, my reading is, I think one of the IPC proposals was not actually a proposal to change policy.
Well, I think there are several of them that could be read a certain way that aren't. So
yeah.
No.
I didn't read the URS one as a. I read the US URS one as the proposal to keep existing policy and just made a particularly silly suggestion about implementation. The ones that are changing policy, my feeling is that I don't think they're going to get any traction from Fadi, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to let people know the Adobe chat room is now up. I don't have sound working in it yet, but everybody on this call's already got sound, but the Adobe room is working.
Oh, great. Thank you, Arby. Are you able to manage that, to operate that? Because I'm not
yes,
on a computer where I can get on Adobe.
That's just it. I needed Glenn to come give me host. It wasn't set up automatically, but now I've got host.
Great.
Anything you want displayed there or anything? I'm going to cut the agenda in shortly.
Yeah, that's really what I would think of.
Anything you want, let me know.
Agenda. Thank you. Okay. All right. So, no questions or comments on this issue.
just thanks for doing it, and yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how it goes. I mean, I know the issue of it may be that Fadi is not wanting to, you know, provide a lot of funding because he's not really planning for anything much to happen.
That would be nice, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a good possibility of that. I just, you know, the jury's out. We'll wait and see what happens.
Yep.
All right. Anything else on this point, or shall we move on?
Plus one on the thanks.
Yes. I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so the next point is the Cyber Cafe constituency proposal. And for those who don't know, we've set up a small internal working group for people of anyone in the stakeholder group who's interested in looking at this proposal and evaluating this proposal. The process is such that we, the stakeholder group, need to send a recommendation to the ICANN Board of Directors in early January as to whether or not we think this is an application that they should approve for a constituency in our stakeholder group. And we've just set this working group up and only had, I think, one or two emails so far, so really just kind of getting the process started. But I'm hopeful that we can get an initial evaluation. You know, we can all look at the initial materials and compare them against the criteria given to us in the packet, the application packet, and come up with an initial evaluation in a couple of weeks. And then we should, according to the materials given to us, engage in a dialogue with the applicant to see if there's anything that they think we're missing or we think they're missing, and just to try to reach some kind of an understanding and engage in a dialogue with the applicant. And then maybe we'll need to refine our initial evaluation based upon any additional questions or clarifications that we had for them or them for us, and then give our final recommendation to the board again, in I think the first week of January, as to whether or not we recommend that they approve this constituency within our stakeholder group. So if anyone is interested in participating in this working group, that would be great. If you haven't already signed up, just let me know, and or send a note to Glenn, and she can put you on the email list, or I'll send a note to Glenn and have you put on the email list. And we'd certainly welcome anyone's energy in this effort. Did anyone have any questions or comments on this? Cricket. All right. Okay, so I guess nothing more on the Cyber Cafe constituency proposal. We'll just plug along in the working group and come up with an initial evaluation that then people can refine further.
My two cents of input is that they're commercial.
Okay. Well, you know, you're not the first person to raise that concern that this may be a commercial endeavor that perhaps more properly belongs in the Internet service provider constituency, for example. That's definitely a concern that's been raised by a number of people thus far in the process.
Yeah. And if they are, I mean, the biggest concern is do they belong in NCSG at all? But then even if they don't, should they be a constituency? They seem to be sort of one umbrella organization.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I think we're going to have, I mean, it is going to be interesting. Well, I don't think we're going to come down very positively on their proposal. We need to find out why they want to be where they want to be. They may.
Yeah, it's my understanding that they were very insistent on wanting to join the non-commercial stakeholder group, that some of the members of staff, when they were initially dealing with the application, suggested that perhaps the better fit for them would be in the commercial stakeholder group, and perhaps that is where they should apply. And my understanding is they said, no, we want to apply in NCSG. So we have to go through the process of evaluating the application and going through the process.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Aubrey.
Yes.
I think we have to acknowledge that part of the reason they want to be non-commercial is because they think they are. And I'm not saying that we can't reject them for being commercial, because I definitely see merit in that argument. But we have to be aware that they believe they are non-commercial. They believe that the bulk of what they do and the way they do it is a non-commercial effort.
Well, you know, you raise a good point that when we go into this questions and clarifications phase, that we should ask them, you know, what is your understanding of non-commercial, and you know, how do you see this fitting within the non-commercial stakeholder group? I mean, are profits distributed to shareholders at some point, or is this all going back into public works funding? I don't know, and so it would be interested to get a sense from them as to how they feel this is non-commercial.
You have Amr with his hand up.
Ah, Amr, please.
Hi, this is Amr. I just wanted to ask, is part of the mandate of this working group to also determine where in the ICANN community they might belong, or are we just to evaluate their application?
Yeah, I think it's really just to evaluate their application and... you know, I mean, because really all our jurisdiction begins and ends with the non-commercial stakeholder group. And so, you know, maybe we can imagine that they belong in a particular other constituency or stakeholder group. But I think it's really just our task to decide whether or not they belong in the NCSG period.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Any other points on this one, the Cyber Cafe proposal? Okay, let's move on to the third point, the possible non-contracted parties house intersessional meeting in January 2013. So this began as part of the financial year 13 budget process, when various constituencies applied to ICANN for funding so they could each hold a meeting of their own that would be different for their different needs. Some, I think, NPOC wanted an outreach meeting, and NCUC wanted a policy meeting, and some of the commercial stakeholder groups wanted to meet with staff. And so, you know, everyone kind of had a different idea as to what they wanted with respect to a meeting to be funded by ICANN. And what ICANN did was just sort of roll all these requests up into one and say, okay, well, we're going to have one intersessional meeting, and you can all come, but we'll have to, you know, work out a compromise as to what the purpose and goals of the meeting are. So it's a little bit, frankly, not well organized and not well thought out by the staff, I think. But currently, where it stands is they're organizing a meeting for January, the last Tuesday and Wednesday in January. Let me get my calendar and I'll tell you the exact dates. In Los Angeles, for the non-contracted parties house, and they're still talking about the scope of the discussions and the purpose of the meeting, and it is looking like it will be dealing with some policy issues and talking directly with senior-level ICANN staff members about these issues. Okay, and I guess we're looking at January 29 and 30 as the dates in Los Angeles that this would happen. And so ICANN is going to provide some funding for participation at this meeting for the counselors and some members of the executive committee. And right now we're just sort of in a plan, still in the organization and planning phase with the staff and with the other leaders in the different stakeholder groups in our house, the commercial stakeholder group, about setting the parameters of the discussion and the topics of the discussion, and who is to lead the discussions and who is to participate in the meeting, and that sort of thing. So that's sort of where that meeting stands in terms of its planning and organization. Does anyone have any questions or comments on that?
Well, just a wonder of, can we, at least if they're bringing a bunch of people together in one place, make use of that for our own work?
Well, that was one of the things that we requested, was that we wanted to spend some of this time not with the commercial stakeholder group, but with ourselves, and trying to work through some of our policy issues ourselves. And so it looks like that we've sort of gotten some headway on that request, and there will be a couple hours of time set aside for a breakout for the constituencies to work amongst themselves in about whatever their particular issue is that they want to talk about.
I was suggesting that we could self-organize that separate from, you know, since travel is the bulk of cost for any of these things. If getting the travel funded, we should just try.
So what would you suggest we do?
Just do some more coordination on list, and not to take up this call. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, well, that's, you know, we could organize our time, you know, however we like. So if there are any,
and maybe ask for some remote participation.
Yes, there will be remote participation. Thank you for reminding me. There will be remote participation, so anyone can participate from anywhere.
Oh, this is our question.
Yes.
So with remote participation, in other words, the requirements for only the number of people who could physically be in the room, but more people can actually remotely participate?
That's right. ICANN was only going to fund, you know, X number of travelers.
Oh, I thought that was a permitted in the room, not a funded, I see.
Yes, for this intersessional meeting, there will be remote participation, so any member can join remotely, which is great. You know, that it'll be a big help, I think. Okay, well, also sort of in the same vein of this meeting was the other issue that he asked us to discuss, which was the vice chair elections. And for those who don't know, we had had an agreement with the commercial stakeholder group to rotate the candidate for the vice chair election for our house, the vice chair of our house, the non-contracted party's house. So 1 year it would be the commercial stakeholder group candidate, and the next year it would be the non-commercial stakeholder group candidate, and we'd rotate it back and forth. Unfortunately, the commercial stakeholder group doesn't want to honor this agreement at this point in time, and so we haven't been able to get our candidate. It's our turn. We haven't been able to get our candidate put forward for the vice chair seat. So we've been at somewhat of an impasse because without the agreement of the commercial stakeholder group, there isn't a whole lot we can do. So one of the thoughts is we should ask the ICANN ombudsman if he would be willing to look into this matter and perhaps provide some neutral, independent evaluation forward. Yes.
So this is Wendy, and I wanted to suggest, I think we had reached a different framing of our request to him, that we want to invite him to help us to mediate the dispute here. We don't want his evaluation. We want his services as a neutral mediator to help us to reach agreement.
Okay, that's an important distinction. Thank you for correcting me.
That's my understanding as well.
So were there any thoughts on this? Does anyone think that this is the right approach? Because, without some kind of agreement, nothing changes, and the commercial stakeholder group vice chair will remain in the position until there is a resolution. And one of the things the only thing that Marilyn proposed was that we discuss it at the intersessional meeting in January. Well, you know, of course, the term will be half over by then. There'll just be a couple of months left in the annual year, or not a couple months, but half the year, so to speak. And so, that's just waiting too long, and I think we need to resolve this sooner than that. So are folks pretty comfortable with the idea of asking the ombudsman to mediate the dispute?
I'll back off.
Oh, okay. David, I just think we should. The only thing is to, when we include that request to the ombudsman, of course, we should mention the time frame that. Issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it may well, I mean, we should be prepared that what may well end up happening at this point is it may end up stretching out to the intersessional, just have some a more structured discussion at that point.
Yes. Aubrey, did you have something on this point?
I basically was agreeing that at this point, all else having failed, and even you mentioned that if it didn't succeed, you were going to take it to, or at least I think you indicated that, you know, it might be time to bring the ombudsman in. I think it makes a lot of sense. The number of times that tool has been used, you know, against various parts of NCSG, I think it's appropriate that, you know, we make use of it. And we have the documentation from the email. I don't think they've produced anything else that counters that. And, let's just quit messing about with them.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much my feeling in a nutshell as well. So, okay, then I guess that's our path forward. Okay, so the next part of the agenda is to go over some of the motions and discussion items for the GNSO Council meeting on Thursday. And the first motion on the agenda is the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group on the Uniformity of Contracts. So the RAP working group recommended that an issue report evaluate whether a minimum baseline of registration abuse provisions should be created for ICANN agreements. The final issue report, which was submitted to the GNSO Council on 21 September, recommends the initiation of a PDP. So the Council must now consider a motion to initiate a PDP. How do folks feel about this, and in particular, how are counselors feeling about this, since you all have to vote on it in 48 hours? Any thoughts?
I'm trying to go find the motions.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull that up, too. So it's basically after the therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO will initiate a PDP on the issues defined in the final issues report on uniformity of contracts. A drafting team will be formed to create a charter for a working group, which will be submitted to the GNSO for approval. And following the approval of the charter, the working group will be created for the purpose of fulfilling the requirements of the PDP. I guess we need to go back and look at what's in the issues defined in the final issue report on uniformity of contracts. I don't know. I mean, I haven't really looked at this in detail, but I'm always skeptical of you know, working groups that are trying to create new forms of abuse, registration abuse.
This one is not swapped in for a while, so I'm trying to go back and look at it.
It doesn't look like it's been seconded, at least according to the GNSO's website. I don't see a seconding for this particular motion. Actually, I don't see them for any of our motions for this week. So maybe they'll...
Might be a short meeting. And my network is having all sorts of problems, so I'm not able to pull things up. Okay. Shall we move on, not having anything to say about this one?
Okay, certainly. Because the next couple of issues are actually, I think we've got a lot to say on. The next motion... Second level protections for certain IOC Red Cross names in the first round of new GTLVs. So the IOC Red Cross drafting team has forwarded its recommendations that the GNSO Council recommend to the board that it adopt the IOC Red Cross drafting team's recommendations, providing for temporary reservation of the exact match IOC Red Cross names at the second level prior to delegation of the first round of new GTLVs. So the GNSO Council is now asked to consider approval of this. Refer to Motion 2. So looks like Motion 2 is made by Jeff Newman. And then it's just basically that it adopts the drafting team's recommendations to temporarily reserve the exact match at the second level or the GACS recommendation, pending the outcome of recently launched policy development process. Well, you know, unless my memory is wrong, we put in a minority statement against this recommendation of council, and, you know, I know a lot of us filed comments on this issue that was against what the recommendation was, and they were, you know, from what I could tell, just thrown in the trash. The working group didn't even try to amend their preliminary recommendation, or, you know, it was just a bunch of lobbyists from the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee, by and large, and they got to write their own proposals, and now GNSO Council is going to rubber stamp them, from what I can tell. So I would suggest we vote no. Now, how's that for some provocative speech? Anyone else got anything to say?
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly, and hopefully my, you know, I did put comments in, and we did have a statement in there that said yes to PDP, and we voted for the PDP, and said no to moratoria. So the PDP exists. That was done separately. And we, as a group, were against the, you know, whether you call it a second reserve list or a moratoria. So I would suggest that, you know, our council members get the recommendation that they vote no. And remembering that one can make a statement as part of voting yes and no, you no longer need to abstain to make a statement. I recommend that they, you know, take various lines from the statements we made that, you know, there's enough time to do this moratoria once the group has started working, that, you know, we're against this special stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And, yeah, you know, we'll lose, but at least we'll be consistent.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I would be, too, is let's take the opportunity of the of making a statement to point out that, you know, we didn't vote for this. This was not a unanimous recommendation of council, and a lot of us made suggestions that were not taken into account by this working group, and we're going to vote no on it. And you're right, we're going to lose, but, you know, at least we'll get a chance to explain why, and try to draw some attention to the broken process that led to this recommendation in the first place.
Yep, happy. I'm happy with that.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay, not hearing any, we can move on to motion number 3, which is the approval of the ENGO Protection PDP Working Group Charter. The GNSO Council has initiated a PDP and created a working group on an expedited basis to evaluate the protection of names, acronyms of certain intergovernmental organizations, including intergovernmental organizations and non-governmental organizations such as the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee. The working group has developed a charter for this PDP, and the council must now consider a motion to approve the charter. Refer to motion 3. Boy, I tell you, the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee, they sure have us hopping around all over the place.
But on this one, we agreed.
Yeah, no, my point is just all of our ICANN time and energy seems to be spent on protecting the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee.
But remember, the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee don't want this. They don't want to be considered like everyone else. They don't want to be considered in a PDP. And I think in the charter, I think this time we did manage to get the specific language, although I have to go back and read it for sure at the end, we did get the language for the impact analysis and stuff. I'm not positive, but I think we did. So, and we're trying to go for the single reserve name list so that, you know, whether it's a poison pill or just an extension of what is right, anything they decide is applicable also to incumbents. I think it's as good a charter as we're going to get on this group.
Great. Well, I had a call with some folks from At Large the other day about this. Evan and Alan reached out. They're pretty concerned that the lobbyists from the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee are going to have their way with this working group, basically. And so they were looking for some for us to help them to bring in some real high level legal expertise, trademark law professors who can sort of match the what the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee are saying on these issues from a legal perspective. And so I sent out some emails to some law professors, and I've got a few good trademark law professors who are interested in joining this working group and working with us to defend non-commercial users in this working group. So I don't know. Maybe you guys know. Do you know Leah Schaefer? She used to be with Yale Information Society, and another guy named David Opterbeck, who is with Seton Hall and University, and like I said, Leah Schaefer, she's at Indiana University right now. And I've worked with her before when she was at Yale on some A2K stuff, and she was great. And then a lady named Debbie Rosenbaum, who's a lawyer in MOFO, Morrison & Foerster, but she's leaving Morrison & Foerster, and she's done a bit of work with the Berkman Center folks. And she's also volunteered to help us with this. So these are three pretty good law professors who are interested in joining this working group and trying to bring a little bit more high-level legal analysis to push back on some of the things that the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee are saying. Because, you know, at this point they just go in there and they say, these are our rights, and these are our rights, and these are our rights, and there's nobody to say that. Well, actually, that's a bit of an overstretch of your rights. So so that's where we are with these. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to try to set up a call for these new folks to try to get them up to speed on this issue in the next week or so, and try to explain the context and how this process has moved for the last several months and sort of what our concerns are and where we'd like to see this to go, the direction we'd like for it to head in. So that's kind of my thoughts on this issue. Anyone else or comments, questions, reactions?
Just a comment. Yeah, the IRS and this one is going to get legally wild. the Red Cross, I spoke to them, some Red Cross people in Toronto, and they are specifically now bringing in people who are experts in specifically humanitarian law, who were talking about how they explicitly believe that humanitarian law covering the Red Cross trumps free expression in most cases, for example.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Argument?
Not quite, but they are going to argue that there is very special law covering, and I think I managed to convince them that there are possibly cases where it would be appropriate, you know, they can't just rely on a string match, for example, and stuff like that. So, it's going to get, they're definitely going to need some serious legal expertise on this one. I think it's a great initiative. But we're going to need more than trademark law as well. It's going to get interesting.
Yeah. Savory. Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. I think part of that is they are going to go beyond trademark law. The Red Cross, Red Crescent, is not going to make its arguments based on trademark law. They're going to make it based on international law and treaties and the national relationship between the local Red Cross organizations and their links to the actual governments. And I think that those arguments are going to be interesting, and, you know, I wouldn't even take bets against them prevailing. But what they will be doing, I believe, is in doing that, they will be separating themselves from the IOC and from the other IGOs and INGOs. And so, you know, I think David is absolutely correct. It is going to be the most fascinating of discussions between treaties, humanitarian diplomacy, you know, the requirements of Geneva Convention plus trademark law. And, you know, I don't think that they would say that it trumps freedom of expression at all, but I think that they might make arguments that are very similar to the arguments we hear out of GAC and such in terms of using the national name, and that the national name, for example, you know, some country, Red Cross, is as protected by the convention as the symbol. And so for anybody that's interested, I mean, we care about it from many different aspects, but for anybody that's interested in a most fantastic set of legal arguments we've had inside ICANN, I do believe there's going to be heavyweight presence that know a lot. So it's going to be a great PDP working group.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, and just to add to what Avery said, yes, the Red Cross using humanitarian law is an interesting development because it means they're definitely distancing themselves from the IOC and broader arguments. They're making a specific case for the Red Cross as being separate, which we may well end up sort of, they may well end up being a much harder to argument fight than they may well end up prevailing, as Avery said. A lot of their demand.
But then again, you know, the other part of it is, if this is one of the things that to me is almost more important, and this is personally, I know this is not the NCSG position necessarily, more important than keeping out protections for the national Red Cross institutions, is that there be a single reserved name list, and that anything that goes everywhere. It's just not new GTLDs, which is kind of always easy for people to say, oh, you know, they haven't started yet.
Yeah.
If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And we have a single reserve name list no matter what.
Aubrey, from a tactical standpoint, do you think that taking that position would help to perhaps discourage the creation of these rights since the incumbents don't want to do it?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that I'd say it's the creation of rights. It's the accepting of rights as having a bearing. And it certainly puts it in a different perspective, and I definitely think it minimizes the set of things that may or may not be accepted. So for example, if the acceptance is for, you know, full proper name, American Red Cross, or whatever name they are chartered under by the country, is the one and only thing that's reserved, you know, you may be able to keep to a very small set, not acknowledging and not giving that that's where they're going to get, but also then keeping out other things that are less appropriate. Do I think it's a poison pill? I don't know. It could be. It certainly won't make it easier.
Do you have the sense that there's a lot of sympathy in the community for IGOs generally? I mean, because part of me wonders, you know, why, what's wrong with the protection mechanisms that we created for all organizations?
They don't actually work that way. And others, part of the problem is that a lot of the protections we've created at the second level rely upon trademark law. And these things are not necessarily trademarks. And so they may not have access. So the recommendation that could come out is fix the other mechanisms, not necessarily put them on a reserve list. But the mechanisms we've got tend towards trademarks. Not every country, you know, trademarks the names of all these things, nor do we necessarily want to insist that the only way to protect a name is to buy into this horrible trademark system. So there may be solutions that go beyond reserve name list. You know, maybe there is an ancillary to our trademark-based system. I don't know. But I do know is that not all of these groups feel they're protected under trademark law, and I can also personally see, since I don't buy into the trademark system as much as most of you do, for coming up with perhaps other ways of looking at things other than trademark is king.
But coming up with, and we can come up with a new set of special rights with this mechanism, and we can come up with a new set of special rights here. I mean, that doesn't sound like a good approach to me either. Just because trademark is so bad, why do we want to extend those kinds of rights and protections to other sets of...
Maybe valid.
Well, is it? I mean, I haven't really heard any examples of who isn't protected here under our existing mechanisms. I mean, what are some concrete examples for how somebody is left without adequate protection?
I don't think the Sri Lanka Red Cross is protected by trademark. I mean, yes, American Red Cross has trademarked itself.
But irrespective of that, what is it with our existing mechanisms? It doesn't get the Sri Lankans, what Red Cross, what they want. I mean,
they don't have any ability to object. The UDRP does not.
They're using their mark in commerce. That's trademark protection.
It's not in commerce. It's going to be a wonderful, fascinating.
Yeah, no, but I agree. There are all sorts of places where they don't. Or argue that they aren't permitted to take advantage of courts, and because they can't subject themselves to jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would want to have some concrete examples for who can't get what they're legitimately entitled to before we set off on a new set of, you know, an exploratory exercise to create a new set of rights.
That's right.
I think this is what the PDP process will hopefully give us. It'll give them the opportunity to provide examples if they exist. It'll give us opportunity to provide counterments. It's going to be a very complicated and interesting one, which is what we've said all along, that it's a complicated question.
And it's about time we have this discussion in its full depth, because we've been circling around various aspects of this for years. And it's on. I suggest you participate as well, because it's you know, that's the place for you to demand the proof. I think I've seen it, you know, but I'm not certainly going to argue it. And you know, but I think I've seen that there are different things being discussed, and it isn't just trademark, and there may be just causes in it all. I don't include the Olympic Committee in that.
Yeah, the Olympic Committee are in fact attempting to overrule other people's legitimate trademarks. It should be an interesting, interesting argument.
right, I've got to sign off.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. And I think the other items on the council agenda are informational.
Although
yes, if we
discussion
come up with
items.
Some things about ATRT, share them on the
yes,
list.
The URS and defensive registrations.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks.
Okay, so should we quickly go through, see if we have anything to add on these three discussion topics on the council agenda? Or was there more on, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut off that discussion if it was still ongoing. No? Okay, so let's move on to the URS, Uniform Rapid Suspension. So on September 18th, Kurt Pritz wrote to the GNSO Council Chair to inform the Council of ongoing discussions on the implementation of the Uniform Rapid Suspension System. This was discussed in Toronto and has now been followed up by an email update to the Council on November 6th. The Council agreed on a course of action in Toronto, and the purpose of this discussion is to ensure that the Council is up to date and to consider whether or not any different course of action is required. Okay. Of course, I need to look at, actually open this email to see what course of action we are, in fact, talking about. Okay, so OLAF is asking for a drafting team to be set up by the GNSO to address adjustments in, I guess, responses to the URS RFI. So does it look like Council is going to set up a drafting team on this? Because I haven't seen any more discussion or...
It seemed like we were all kind of keen on waiting to see more. In Toronto, we were all keen on waiting to see more detail about the actual responses.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sounds like you have to wait until November 20th or so till these responses are all in before deciding what to do about them.
But given that there's now at least one, I believe at least one response that says no, that says they're willing to do it with no necessary changes to the URA.
Yeah, I think there are two, NAF and Paul McGrady's got a group.
Yeah.
So, you know, this may be a moot point that somebody is now, several bodies have now come forward and said we can do this at cost without significant change. So, okay. So I guess we'll just hear what Kurt and the rest of Council have to say on this point Thursday. Any other comments?
They didn't seem to be a strong. The Council seemed to be all fairly keen that we thought given that there seems to be at least someone who's willing to do it. There didn't seem any. We didn't think there should be any change. So if there is a drafting team, I don't think we need to be unduly concerned about it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think there's any need for a drafting team. It seems like this issue's moot at this point. And even if there is a need for one, we should at least wait until November 20th until all the responses are in, and then if we don't, you know, if for some reason these two who said they can't do it now don't seem realistic or change their mind, or it turns out they do want significant changes, you know, at that point.
Or it may just turn out they want clarification.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, they might just say, oh, look, we're not quite sure what you meant here. Please tell us. Or we could do it this way or that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else on URS? All right, so the other issue on the next issue on the agenda is defensive registrations discussion. Staff has delivered a briefing paper to the Council on the topic of defensive registrations at the second level in response from a request from the new GTLD committee. The new GTLD committee requests that the GNSO consider whether additional work on defensive registrations at the second level should be undertaken. The Council is to discuss whether to undertake any additional work on this topic, especially in light of continued discussions in Toronto on this topic. I can tell you what I think. I mean, I think that this is just more of the IPC and the BC crying and complaining about how the Internet is growing and now they're going to have to protect their trademarks in new ways at additional expense. And you know, I really don't have a lot of sympathy for that argument. So I don't think that we need to do any more work on fending off against defensive registrations. I think, you know, we've done that. We've taken that concern into consideration in the development of the overall GNSO policy that came out in the guidebook, and I don't know what's come to light that indicates we need more work or that those protections are insufficient. So I would be happy to hear arguments to the contrary if somebody thinks we do need to do more work on defensive registrations, but that's just, you know, me speaking personally, what I think. I'd be really curious to hear what others think.
I certainly don't think there's a compelling case for the defensive registration is a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else on defensive registrations? I mean, I agree. I just don't see it as being a big
yeah.
issue. Not our issue. Not one we need to spend our time and energy on. All right. So the last issue on the agenda is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, ATRT, selection process and timetable discussion. So there's a pending call for applications to serve on the ATRT-2 as an independent expert or as a volunteer team member in representation of an ICANN SO/AC, as referenced in the announcement, and call for applicants. So it looks like that now people who are interested in participating on this team, and I hope we'll have folks from the NCSG who throw their hat in the ring for this, are to submit their applications, and the GNSO will make some recommendations. And this part I'm not clear about, and maybe David or Avery have a little more clarification about the process that the GNSO is going to go through in its in determining its selections for this team. Is it the case that, you know, each stakeholder group can pick a representative, or is it the case that the GNSO picks one representative? And you know, if that's the case, is there a process that's been agreed to within the GNSO for making that selection? Does anyone know?
Avery, I don't know for sure, but if I remember correctly, on this team, doesn't the GNSO have four slots? And I think what the GNSO did last time, but I don't know that this is a precedent, is that if it was the one with four slots, they did let each stakeholder group, you know, of the applicants that had been sent in, pick one. So there may have been a slight complication in how it worked. I'd need to go back.
My understanding of the process, and the ATRT might be slightly different to the, I mean, I only followed it closely with the FSR, is that the GNSO, some candidates are GNSO endorsed candidates, that the GNSO
will limit that, had a process of limiting that to essentially, I think, one per constituency. And that we ended, that means there are slightly more GNSO candidates than there are actually slots for GNSO representatives. I think there's like 6 for 4 or something like that. And that the choice of which GNSO representatives actually go through comes down to, I think in this case, in the case of the ATRT, the board chair and GAC chair. So the GNSO basically puts forward a shortlist, and the shortlist is essentially one per constituency.
Is it per constituency or per stakeholder group? Because if it's per constituency, again, non-commercial users get screwed.
Yeah, so it might be, I don't know whether it's one per constituency or per stakeholder group. Possibly per constituency, but the other hand is they don't necessarily get screwed because I think it was per constituency was the process we followed last time, and so that did mean that the CSG put forward more candidates, but in the end, it was the one of the CSG candidates was the one that got not rejected. So essentially, the balance was corrected in the selection process. I don't know. I mean, I suspect on the call we'll actually be discussing whether we're going to. I suspect the council call will be discussing whether we use the same process.
Right, and so I'm sure that the commercial stakeholder group is going to want it to be, you know, where constituencies make decisions and constituencies have representatives.
Yeah.
And you know, my view is that it should be the stakeholder group, where non-commercial users have an equal say to the commercial users. So that would be my
But GNSO does not get the final call, and they will.
GNSO works out for its own internal decisions.
Yeah. So we don't. But it's important to remember that GNSO is only determining the shortlist, not the. And there's actually no reason why it needs to be limited as tightly as the GNSO has in the past, I think. In particular, the criteria for selecting the team, they will want to be addressing, you know, geographical diversity and so forth. So the criteria, they will use other criteria than just balancing GNSO conditions, whatever, in selecting who they put on the team.
Do we have any candidates? Anyone, have they already thrown their hat in the ring for this or intend to?
This is Avery. I intend to throw my hat. I don't have a hat. but throw
put your scarf in the wind.
Find out when I have to get it written by.
It's by December the 5th.
By December the 5th. Yeah.
And personally, I think Avery would be an excellent candidate.
Thank you.
I agree.
Me too. All right, by acclamation.
Let me see if I get my application in first. But thank you all.
and we don't know who else might apply from the group. We have to.
Right.
We should have an internal process. If we get more than one applicant, we should have an internal process.
I think our charter has a definition that I think it's the EC that does things like that, if I remember correctly.
I think
maybe
so.
The PC,
yeah.
But I think it's the EC.
Okay, well, I guess we'll know more about this after Thursday's call, because I expect that's what the council will be working through on Thursday, or figuring out a lot of these process and selection sort of issues, and then we'll have something to chew on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't think why they'd put it on the agenda unless they were planning to sort of solidify the process.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is.
But that may well just be going, let's use the process we used last time because no one has any serious problems with it.
It could be. It could be. But then again, maybe people had some issues or some problems that need, you know, working through or thinking about again. I'm trying to think. Our representative on that was that.
That's one where we shifted one and a half way. We had
Willie, right?
Willie, and then he left, and then we had Carlos.
Right.
I think.
I think that's right too. Yeah.
Also, I mean, this process was what, 4 years ago or something that they did. I doubt there's that many people in the council that actually remember. I mean, I'm sure staff does, but you know, it's
yeah,
a lot of different counselors, so they may or may not want to do the same thing.
Yeah, they may be imagining that they're starting from scratch and devising a process that works for this council.
Well, I'm sure some staff member will remind people of what was done last time, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts or remarks on this point?
Is it worth pushing this? If it comes up, is it worth pushing the stakeholder group versus constituency point?
Yes. That's why I raised it.
Yes,
I think And I think that, you know, it's not just in this context, but it's in all these different contexts where the commercial stakeholders, because they are three groups and we are only two groups, it's in their interest to say, well, we're going to divide everything up according to constituency, and which sounds, you know, might sound fair on first blush, but when you actually look at that, you know, all of the non-commercial users, we were forced into one constituency until recently. And so it disadvantages us when they will essentially get three bites at the apple and we'll get two bites at the apple for whatever the issue is. So,
well, I think we did try the last time to raise the argument of perhaps we should be allowed to throw, if we threw in an extra candidate, it would give us more chance of letting people get through the, you know, the diversity, be selected diversity criteria as well. I think we should probably raise that argument as well. Just go, look, structural differences, if we get an extra, we get three instead of two non-commercials, then that's one more person from the GNSO that might, you know, basically all we're doing, we won't be changing the representation on the final review team, we'll be giving the two chairs one more person to try and one more option to try and tick all the diversity boxes they need to tick.
That's fine, but they're not going to tick, you know, I don't want a non-commercial user to go because they want somebody from Europe. I mean,
yeah, well,
you know.
but that's the point. If we have one more non-commercial user, it makes it less likely that that will happen. Presuming we demonstrate diversity in our candidates.
Yeah.
But hopefully they're not going to push. I mean, hopefully they're going to try very hard to get the best candidates they can, and they have a fair idea who they are too. So.
Okay, any other points on this, thoughts on this one, ATRT?
Nope.
Okay. Well, that was the last agenda item on our discussion agenda for today. Was there anything else anybody wanted to add or go back to?
Nope.
Hearing nothing. Wow. So we're actually done about 40 minutes early today. That's a first. Great. Okay. Well, then I guess unless there's something else somebody wants to add, we can call this meeting to a close. And I will thank you all for participating in the call.
Thank you, yeah. Robin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, I guess we can sign off now. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.